No? Okay, yep.
Right.
Yep, okay. Shmuel Omar, Shmuel began his exposition with the following pasuk. It's written again in the Teichachom. It says, you know, that nevertheless, in spite of all the things that happened, right, the Rebbeinu Shalom says, Lo miyastim, but lo gi'altim lechalosam. Nevertheless, I did not despise them, nor did I feel that they deserved to be belittled, to destroy them. The Rebbeinu Shalom, in spite, in other words, of the tzaras of the people of Israel, in spite of the fact that they didn't fulfill mitzvahs and everything else, but nevertheless, the Rebbeinu Shalom did not destroy the people of Israel. And he explains, Lomi asked him, I did not despise them when? Bimeyibonim, in other words, at the time when the Greeks ruled over the people of Israel, and you know, they committed, and what happened? Loads of Jews did what?
They became
Greeks, you know, that's what we call Hellenists, right? Okay, but nevertheless, Rebbeinu Shalom did not despise the people of Israel to destroy them. But lo ge'altim, nor did I reject them when the Yimei Nebuchadnezzar, in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the Chaloisam, or to destroy them, Yimei Haman. Lohofer brisi yitam, and so that I would not destroy my covenant with them. And when did this happen? We made Parsi in the days of the Persians. Why? Ki ani Hashem lekehem, because I am the Lord their God. And when will this be also fulfilled? We made Gog and Magog. In other words, when the final struggle comes against the forces of evil in the world, the Rebbeinu Shalom will save the people of Israel from destruction.
Rabbi,
yeah.
The Hellenists, for a moment,
yeah.
They didn't forsake Judaism and go for the gods, did they?
Many of them did.
Oh, they did.
Many of them did, sure.
Because I thought it was the culture that they absorbed.
Well,
more than
that's
the religion.
Right.
They ate it up.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We have cases that even some of the men tried to destroy the fact that they were circumcised.
Yeah.
By having an operation in order to have a foreskin.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's how far some of them went. Right. Yeah. By the way, I hate to say it, but you know that there are Jews today who are also carrying on the whole campaign against Bris Mila, against circumcision, and some of them even are trying to alter their penises so that they can have foreskins again.
Not only today, it goes back to the early from.
Yeah.
The early 1900s
started
there.
Yeah. Well, it's no question, that there are some Reform Jews.
Is that Reconstruction?
Huh? I wouldn't say that. Here I have to say the Reconstructionists, I understand what you're saying, but the Reconstructionist movement still believes in having a bris. With the Reform, it's yes and no. They don't force anybody.
It's slowly coming back.
Right. Little by little. I mean, when they have to issue decrees among the Reform rabbis that maybe they should require a person who wants to convert to, you know, to undergo a bris, or maybe even to go into the mikveh, God forbid, you know, so we see that some of them feel, you know, that they've gone too far.
The early Reform actually went to the government to issue a decree that there should be no bris.
Right.
Official decree of the government.
Yeah.
That was the main issue.
Now you're talking about the days of the Greeks.
The 1820s.
Oh, the 1820s?
Yeah, the Reform went to the government.
What happened?
The Reform leaders went to the government.
Oh, they went to the government to, to compel Jews not to circumcise?
But what leaders are where?
The leaders of the Reform movement
in
Germany.
Look, you read the story of the Malbim?
Yeah.
But only the Obers went to the government.
Okay, the Masnisa Tana, another tradition, teaches also about the same pasuk. Lomi Astim, I did not despise them when we make Astim, in the days of the Babylonians, Shehem Arati Lohem Daniel Hanani Mishel Vazario, because when the Jews were under the rule of the Babylonians, God sent unto them Daniel, right? and Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were the three who were cast into the fiery furnace, all right? In other words, he sent them salvation. The Logi Altim, nor did I despise them, in the days of the Greeks. Yivonim Shehem Arti Lehem Shimon Atzadik V'chashmenai Yivonim Raitu Matis Yohu Kein Godo. Because in those days I appointed for the people of Israel righteous people such as the righteous Shimon and the Chashmedai, right, the Hasmoneans, and his children, and Matis Yohu, who is the Kohen Gadol. Of course, these are all, you know, related to the story of Hanukkah. Okay? Lechaloisa, in order to destroy them. And how about Bimei Haman, in the days of Haman? Who did I point and say the people of Israel? Shem Abdi Lehem Mordechai Esther, right? I pointed for them Mordechai and Esther, Lahofir Brisi Tom, nor did I ever destroy my covenant with them, Yemei Parsiim, in the days of the Persians. Shem Abdi Lehem, because in that time they said to them, Shem Abdi Lehem, Shel Beis Rabbi Vechach Ben Doras, because in the time when the Persians were ruling over the people of Israel, so at that particular time I had Rabbi and the great sages of all times. There's something wrong over here. I'll come back to that in a second. Because I'm the Lord their God, the Othid Novel in the future, Sha'en Koluma Veloshan Yechidim Vishnek Behem. The time will come when no nation will be able to rule over the people of Israel. The people of Israel will once more be free and independent. All right. The problem over here, that's probably what you're alluding to over here, is that they mentioned Persia.
Persia was also after Chulav
Ha'asin. You're right, quite. But who were the rulers in which the time that the Rebbe was living? Rebbe actually lived under Roman.
Yeah.
Right. But the Chachmei Hadoros, that could be both the scholars in Eretz Israel and also the scholars in Bavel.
So really, you're talking
so
after
about that way, right.
They're talking actually in the time of the Gemara.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Time of the Tanoim and the Gemara. Exactly. Right. Okay.
Which was around 400 and...
300,
well,
405,
Rabbi was the editor of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah was edited roughly about the year 200 of the Common Era.
Yeah.
The Gemara, the Babylonian Talmud, was roughly edited about the year 500, so you had about a 300 year span over there.
Time of Rabbi was the Romans, but the Persians came about 350 thereabouts.
Because, you know, the Romans ruled over Eretz Israel, and the Persians ruled over Babylonia, where the Jews were. Babylonia was, of course, a province at that time. Okay. All right, we'll do one more or so. Yes, somebody needs a point,
you know,
two.
We need?
Yes. Yeah.
Rabbi, we need a map so that we can see today where these areas are. You know, when you're talking about Babylonia, I know what, you know.
Babylonia is where Iraq is today. Where Iraq is. Right.
But
okay.
It would be to keep reminding ourselves.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't say only Iraq. Is Iraq also?
Well, there are other areas, right?
Iran, partly Iran.
Right, right. It's true because Elam was further south, and that would be Iran today, right?
And Persia was Iran.
Persia was Iran.
Right.
Iran.
Yeah.
Right.
Abraham
right.
Come from Iraq?
Well, it came from the word Kastim, because Kastim means the Babylonians, literally. All right. So let me do one more and then we'll call it a night, because my voice...
Actually, it's not the countries, it's the rulers of the country.
Yeah. I still would love to have
right. All right. Rabbi Levi Omar Mehocha. Rabbi Levi began his exposition from this passage. It's written in Sefer Bamidbar concerning, you know, the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Yimlo so rishu es yoshvei ha'aretz. If you do not throw out the inhabitants of the land, which you wait, then what's going to happen? So Rabbi Chiyo Amar Behochov, well, all right. Of course, it means, you know, the rest of the pasuk says that they will be Right. Sikim yeinechem, sinim tzideichem. In other words, they will be unto you like pins or needles in your eyes and like thorns in your sides. And of course, we see, exactly. We see in our own.
Is this where the expression thorns in your side originates from here?
Yeah.
You know,
it's a biblical expression.
It's a biblical expression.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, at any rate, we see it today. You know, what was Meir Kahane saying all the time?
Right.
He said, you have to have respect for the Arabs, but the Arabs should flee in a country of their own, and Jews should make sure, you know, that the land of Israel is a Jewish land, you see. But, you know, they called him a racist and everything else, and you know what happened. They threw him out of the Knesset. They, this even the right-wing parties joined in order to throw him out over there.
But this is not the first after Yeshua.
Yeah, of course
they
we're talking.
They didn't conquer the country.
Right.
They let pockets remain,
and as a result, they continued to plague the people.
Well, the Bible has instances like that.
Yeah.
Several of them have.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay. But the point is that in the modern times we've seen the same thing too. Okay. So Rabbi Chiya Omar Mavocha, he began his drasha from this pasuk. Vayor kasher demisi laseis lohem esel lochem. Okay, and it will be that just as, you know, since the reference is the same area over there that we just had, that what I intended to do unto them, I will do unto you. In other words, if you do not take care in conquering the land that will be a Jewish land, right, then in that particular case, what I had in mind for them, instead I will do unto you. In other words, to give you the tzoris that you should. Right. All right, we'll stop at this point, okay? My throat is giving out. And, all right, tonight is the 21st of November in the year 2001, era of Thanksgiving, and we are now continuing from where we left off last week. In Megillah, Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, right in the middle of the page. At this particular page, at this particular moment, we have finished the various psichos, where we had a series of drushes, where various rabbis related some pasuk in the Torah or in the Tanakh to the events that took place in the Megillah, as we've had occasion to see. And at this particular point, we are ready to begin the exposition of Megillah Esther itself. However, as we'll see, each word suggests something else. All right? So the very first word that we have is the word Achashverosh. Everybody knows Achashverosh, right? But it's a very funny name. And so therefore, we have different interpretations. What do the letters of Achashverosh signify? Sort of like an anagram, so to speak. Okay? So Amar Rav. Rav said, you know what Achashverosh? He says, take a look. You see the Aleph Ches over there? That's Achiv. That's the brother Shel Rosh. See? Achiv Shel Rosh. Okay? Which means that he was the brother of the person who was at the head. Meaning who? Meaning Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia. Okay? This is how he interpreted it. Uven Gilo Shel Rosh. Well, we'll see in a moment. I mean, he explains it, all right? Now, Ben Gilo literally means, and the one who shares the same mazel as this Rosh, which means either the same destiny, the same character, or something like that. But I want to tell you that these days, people put on wedding invitations, mazel tovs, to a chosin, the kala, all right? The chosin, let's say, Im Bas Gila. The chosin is Ben Gila, okay? And it's based upon this expression, which means literally, as Rashi says, Gil in this sense means like Basel. In other words, they were born exactly under the same star, so to speak. That's why they were made. They were meant to for each other. They were born under the same star.
So
okay.
That would feel like in terms of numerical age.
We're joined.
Yeah, well, there's no question that today, modern Hebrew, the word Gil means age, right? In the Bible, Gil, on the other hand, means joy.
Gila.
Yeah, it's a shortened form of the word Gila. So, Smechim Ali Gil, for example, we find they are happy unto rejoicing. In other words, they're extremely happy or something like that. So we find that that's the meaning. So the same word can have different meanings, as we say. So anyway, over here then, he not only was the brother of the man who was at the head, but also he had the same destiny or the same fate or the same character, as you wish, of this the head. And he explains, Ochim Shel Rosh, right? So he says, this Ochim Shel Nebuchadnezzar HaRosh. He was like a brother to the wicked Nebuchadnezzar. Now, of course, we cannot say that he was born at the same time as Nebuchadnezzar. You understand?
Are they saying that he was a brother of Nebuchadnezzar?
Brother in the sense that he was like him in character.
Okay,
right?
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Right. Shenikra Rosh. And how do we know that Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as the word Rosh? Shenemar, we have a pasuk in Daniel. What does the pasuk say? It says, Antu Resha the Dahavo. I see this mistake in the print of my book. Okay. But it should be the Dahavo. Okay. In other words, Daniel refers to Nebuchadnezzar as being the golden head. Now, of course, this is a very famous dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, wherein he saw, you know, a statue which had a head of gold and had arms, legs, trunk, etc., you know, silver, metal, and so on. But you know what kind of feet it had?
Clay.
The feet of clay. So. Uh-huh. And that's where we get the expression feet of clay. Right. In other words, it was destined to fall. Okay? So, since Daniel refers to him as the head of gold, and the word head is there, so therefore that's Nebuchadnezzar, and since we are comparing, according to Rav's interpretation, Achashverosh to him, so that therefore he is his brother, so to speak. Okay? And how about Ben Gilo? Well, Ben Gilo Shel Rosh. In what respect? Hu Harag, who became Shairo. See, this here we explain. Nebuchadnezzar killed Jews. And what did Achashverosh want to do? He wanted to kill Jews. Okay? Obviously, how do we know he wanted to kill Jews? Did he ask any questions of Haman when Haman said, you know, let's kill off all the Jews? Of course not. Okay? So, okay, that's one comparison. Hu hechriv, what did Nebuchadnezzar do? He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And hu bikesh lahachriz, and what did Achashverosh want to do? He wanted to destroy the temple. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first temple. Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael, and they began rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash, right? And then all of a sudden, what do we find? We find in the book of Ezra, Shenemar, it's written that v'malchus Achashverosh, that in the kingdom of Achashverosh, right? In other words, when Achashverosh reigned, right? B'tchilas malchuso, at the very beginning of his kingdom, or his kingship, right? I don't like the word kingship particularly. Particularly, I don't like it in that prayer that we
read.
Maybe such in the Shul of Shabbos. No, the English translation. That's what they have. You may take a look in our new Siddur that we have. The article, correct. All right. So at any rate, the rest of the pasuk in Ezra says, "Kosbu sitna al Yoshvei Yehuda v'Yerushalayim." They wrote a false charge and accusation. Of course, you recognize the word satan and the word sitna, right? In other words, it's a similar idea. They wanted to cause trouble, so they wrote a letter to King Achashverosh, who is the day. The answer is the Shomronim, the Samaritans. And there are others too, you know, who hated the Jews and who wanted to see the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and the end of whatever Jewish enterprise was taking place over there. So they sent a letter to Achashverosh at the beginning of his kingdom, and they made false charges concerning the inhabitants of Judah and Yerushalayim, okay? And of course, what do you think happened as a result of that? letter came back from the king, stop the work. Stop the work, okay? And the Jews had to do a lot of work in order to finally undo this. So we see that Ahasuerus was no great friend of the Jews, and just as Nebuchadnezzar sought to destroy the first place of Hamikdash, so we see that Ahasuerus was in the same mood, you know, to destroy whatever work had been done in the second place of Hamikdash. All right, that was Rod's opinion. Now along comes Shmuel. You know, whenever you have Rod, you can be pretty sure that Shmuel is also going to be there. So Omar. Shmuel Omar, he said, you know what Ahasuerus is? It says, take a look at those letters over there. You see the word Shachar? As I say, it's like an anagram, right? You see a ches, you see a resh, right? You see a vav, a resh, right? So he transposed a little bit, but what do you have? You have Shehush Haru Penehem Shel Yisrael B'yom Av Tishrei Kedemah. He says, the faces of the Jewish people in his days became as blackened as the bottom of a pot. In other words, you put a pot on fire, right? And what do you get? It turns black. So the same thing, the Jews, their faces turned black. In other words, they had soros, ashvatzior. This was the problem that the Jews faced in his day. Okay? So that's why Ahasuerus signifies that. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he has a different interpretation of the name. He says, Kol shezochro Omar och l'roishai. Whoever remembers him says, oy vey, to his head. He should have a misin mishuna or something like that. The word och in Hebrew has all kinds of meanings.
Och means okay. Brother, doesn't it?
Yeah, och means brother. Och means also, believe it or not, the heart.
Really?
Yeah. It's another meaning, right? The heart, H-E-A-R-T-H, right? Where the logs burn, right? That's another meaning of the word och. But och in Hebrew means whoa. A disaster or something. Okay, it's a sign of disaster. Okay, so he says, a disaster on his head, meaning that he causes disaster unto us, right? So he should have the same faith. Rabbi Chanina Omar, he says, you know what Ahasuerus is? He says, Shakol Nasu Roshim Biyadvav. Everybody became poor in the days of Ahasuerus. See, the word Rosh in Hebrew means poor. Yeah, it's another word that means right.
Roshin, it says, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the plural.
Oh, the plural.
Yeah. Everybody became Roshin, everybody became
poor.
Poor, right. Like in Russia, you know, they became poor, Russian. No. Okay. Everybody became poor in his days. Shedevar, I know. Yeah, Shlef.
Yeah, you have to.
Right.
You have to be fast.
Yeah, right. Shedevar, as the Pasuk says, and this is the very beginning, the last chapter of the Megillah, it says, Vayosam HaMelech Ahasuerus Mas. Okay? That King Ahasuerus imposed the tax, right? Al Ha'oretz V'yei Hayom, it says, upon all the lands and all the islands of the sea, and so on and so forth. So obviously, I guess he had to eventually pay for all the parties that he had thrown. Okay? And as a result, I mean, he needed guilt. So what did he do? He did what governments everywhere do.
How many days post did taxes. His parties last?
Oh, 180
days.
And then another 7 days for the people in Shushan. Well, you can imagine that they wound up soused over there.
Right.
The women also, right. Yeah, they had their own. Remember, Vashti made a party too, if you remember. Okay.
No, I think she's referring to all the, you know, the retinue they hear.
Oh,
that
yeah,
he had,
yeah,
you know,
of course,
a special
right.
Special palace for this.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely, right.
Giving their, like, training, yeah.
Of course, he also he had variety every night.
Yeah,
trying out
a
new candidate, you know. Right, yeah. Okay. All right. Now, the Pasuk, if you remember, begins by saying, Vayehi b'nei Ahasuerus, and of course, we already had interpreted earlier that Vayehi is a sign of Tzoros, particularly if it says Vayehi b'mei. And we had different psukim which show that when books of the Bible have the expression Vayehi b'mei, there's always Tzoros. Okay? As for example, Vayehi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim, It came to pass at the beginning of the book of Ruth when the judges were ruling, Vayihi Boris, there was famine in the land, okay? Vayihi Bimei fell. This we had the story of Abraham Avinu, where it's written the days of Abraham fell. What was it? It was a war that the five kings against four kings, and Abraham had to go to save his nephew Lot, etc., etc. So Vayihi Bimei is not a very good sign. All right. So the pasuk in the Megillah says Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh, and then it says Who Achashverosh? He is Achashverosh, right? That's the word.
Isn't that repetitive?
Yeah. Sure, it's repetitive. Why? So therefore, now we have a couple of drushes about that. So, who Achashverosh? You know, there are no quotation marks over here, no periods, no nothing. You have to go with the flow, you know, in order to see how to understand it. So, who Achashverosh? He is Achashverosh. He says, who Berisho Mitkilo Soviat Sofa? You know what? It signifies that he was the same Russia from the very beginning of his reign to the very end. Okay? Let us through and through. He was a Russia. And they bring other examples. Why does it say in another place, Hu Esav? So, Hu Esav? Hu Berisho Mitchilos Yatsev? Likewise. He was a Russia from beginning to end. Okay? Hu Dosan Vadiron? Remember that gang in the. Yeah, sure, right? Yeah. So, Ain Berishad Mitchilos and Yatsefen, right? Right, the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? They made tzoras for him all the day with the Rishoyim, okay? Whenever you have a tzora in the Torah, who do you think is responsible? Dosan Va'aviran. Not just Korach, they were allies of Korach. But, you know, according to other interpretations, right, that they have.
They were Levi'im too.
No, Korach was a Levi, but not Dosan Va'aviron. They were B'nai Eliyov.
They were which?
B'nai Reuven. Reuven,
that's right. Yeah. Because
they were... The Omer Pelas was another one who went in with, but Omer Pelas got out of the conspiracy. Yeah. Because he had a smart wife and told him, don't get involved with it. Okay? Then another example. Hu HaMelech Ochoz. It's written concerning King Ahaz, who was one of the kings, you know, later kings of Malchus Yehuda, you know, the first one, that at the end of his life he was already playing around with making, with idolatry or whatever it may be. And so therefore, who Berisha Matilos
V'Atzefa?
Same story.
Oh,
yeah? Yeah, he was a king of Yehuda.
Yeah,
right.
Jezebel was his wife.
Oh,
no, that's Ahab. That's Ahab. This is Ahaz. Ahaz, spell of Yehuda. Nei, Uziyahu, Yosef, Ahaz, Yechizkiyahu, Malchi. In other words, he was the father of Hizkiyahu. Okay? Hizkiyahu was a good king. But Ahaz's father was a Russian. Okay? But you know what? Sometimes who is good? Avram, who Avraham? No, so who Betzidko Mitchilos V'Atzefa? He was righteous from the very beginning to the very end of his life. Who Aaron and Moshe? We have that pasuk. So, Ein Betzidko Mitchilos V'Atzefa. In other words, Aaron and Moshe, they're also, they were tzaddikim right from the time that they began their careers to the very end. The David who are Koton, all right? It's written that David was the little one. The little one. Of course, what it means in the original text is that he was the youngest of all his brothers. Okay. But nevertheless, what they're trying to stress is the fact that he was humble. Who became so? In other words, he was.
Humble?
Yeah. In other words, he remained in his littleness, but meaning really like in his humility, right? From the very beginning to his end.
No more kin?
Yeah. As, and they explain, can it be that we've actually used up this bag already? I guess we could. Well, remember, do I have any more in the box over there?
I'll bring some more.
Yeah. Okay. We may have more, let me see. David, you want to get the box over there and see if there's anything else in there?
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. We don't want to have parched throats over here because we have a thirst for Torah. Okay.
None?
Maybe we should be serving. No, it's gone.
No, all gone.
Oh, I bet.
Very, very, very
Yeah.
There's none. Okay. I'll bring some oil.
All right.
Mirz Hashem, I'll bring some oil.
As it is written, the Habor Reik.
What does that mean?
That the pit was empty.
The pit was empty.
The pit was empty. No, it's about Yosef.
No, no, no.
The crew bit, right.
No water in there. That means there was no water.
Right, right.
I have a little bit of a can.
All right. Okay. Layla, we'll survive. Okay. Where's the Torah? We'll keep us alive tonight.
These
okay.
These are sugar free.
These are sugar free and they're part of
right.
Okay. He explains about David HaMelech being small or humble is really the better translation over here. It says, okay. Kishem she bekatnuso hikinatz mayt from mishagol meinu Torah, just as when he was young, literally, or when he was small, right? But here, let's say, just as when he was young, he was humble before somebody who was greater than him in Torah. In other words, he studied with someone from whom he could learn Torah. He didn't assume that he knew the entire Torah by himself. But he studied with someone, according to one tradition, is Mephibosheth, who was actually related to Saul. Funny thing, right? But anyway, Kachma Malchusa, so likewise, when he became king, Hiktenatzme Etzel Misha Godel Mimenu Bechokmah. Okay? So likewise, he humbled himself before somebody who was greater than him in wisdom. Of course, this is. We have a reference to this, if you remember, in Pirkei Avos. We're spitting over there. Halomei bechaveiro, right? If somebody learns from from his comrade or from his fellow person, right? Pasuk echod, mila achas, etc., etc. So, if you learn the interpretation of what one letter in the Torah can mean, then in that case you have to show respect for that person and consider him as Rabbo Alufo Mutavo, his rabbi, right, or his master, his superior, and the one who is knowledgeable, right? And who do they cite? It says in the Chen David Bad Beachisofil, Shnei Devarim Nuvad. Right, he learned only two things from Achisofil, and nevertheless they use these words that I expressed, because this we find in one of the songs. It's in Yato Enosh Ki Erki, you are a man who I esteem. Right, Alufim Yudoi. You see, so he learned a couple of things from Achisofil. Okay, all right. One of them is that you should always, when you daven, you should be stooped. In other words, you should humble yourself before the Ben Yishalelam, okay? And another one also that, it also says, the base of the Kim Lahalek Beragash, which means that you should go to the house of God always feeling, being in a rush to get there and so on and so forth, because this is a place where we can commune with the Rebbeinu Shalom, okay? So, at any rate, he gave it. Huh? I said that. That's in the last chapter of Pirkei Avos. Perek Vav. Okay. All right. Incidentally, if you look in the Mishnah, you won't find the Perek Vav. No. That was added to the Pirkei Avos and the Siddur, because they wanted to have to fill in the 6 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, and then 6 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos Matamis, and then after that to have again 6 weeks from Shavuos Matamis until second week in Elul, and then finally then you double up for the last time around. That's the way we do it today. Originally it was between Pesach and Shavuos. Okay. So that came from a different section of Talmud, which is called the Perek Kinyan Torah. Okay. All right. Perek Kinyan Torah, which means this is the chapter which deals with how to acquire Torah. Okay. All right. So, as we can see, then, that who doesn't necessarily mean that a person is bad or that a person is necessarily good, but it implies that where it is mentioned, then this was his character, as we can see from the earlier stages to the last stages. All right, now again, you notice that they're analyzing the Megillah word by word. So far we've had by Yehi b'Bei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh, and then what's the next word? It's Hamoleich b'Yehudu v'Yad Kush. So now we're going to analyze those words. Okay? Alright. It is written Hamoleich. Okay? See Hamoleich?
Yeah.
Alright. Omer Rav, again, Rav again is here, right, and he has his interpretation. You know what Hamoleich means? Literally, who reigns, right? Omer Rav, Shemolach mi'atzmo, which means, according to Rav, that he made himself king. He made himself king. In other words, right, he was not born to a royal family, but he got there and he made himself king of Persia.
Power.
He usurped power. But, as we'll see in the next couple of words, some interpret it for good. That's why, Amilo l'shevach, v'yamilo l'gnai. There are those who say it in praise of Achashverosh, and those who say it in condemnation of him, right? Amilo l'shevach, those who want to say it in praise of Achashverosh, they say what? The loy have inesh, the chosh of the malko kavotse. That, in other words, there was no person so worthy of becoming king as he was, and that's why he became king, because he was the best man around. Okay? The Yabilo Lignai, and there are those who say it, you know, in condemnation of him, the Lohava Chosel Malchus, that he did not, he really was not worthy to be a king. Okay? Umamoni Serahu the Yahav. The cup. But it was because he had loads of money that he smeared in order to get to the job. Okay? It reminds me of this Bloomberg in New York City.
With his money.
What did he spend? $60 million? There's another guy in New Jersey, Cousine, also became a senator, also. Yeah. So all of these characters that we see, money helped them get to where they were. Okay, so Achashverosh too. But I guess he was also a big spender, otherwise they wouldn't have said that Achashverosh had to levy a mass, had to levy a tax upon everybody afterwards, right? It made everybody poor.
Even the money he had wasn't enough to...
I guess not. As we would say, he was profligate with money. Profligate.
Well, from where did they get this, Dad? I mean, from what source?
From what source? This is the answer is that they had a tradition. Each one of these, he had heard. Either his Rebbe told him that, or somebody rather, right, he heard it from his Bobbe, who knows? But he had a tradition to this effect. So, frankly, I like this.
Maybe
right. Then it says, "By Yehudu, Yad Kush," right from India to Ethiopia, right? Yeah. Now here again, we have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel, yeah. Chad Omar, one said, Hodu b'sofo ilam, Kush b'sofo ilam, that if we take a look at a map, he says, India is at one end of the world, and Ethiopia is at the other end of the world. Okay? So far, so good. Alright? So we can understand the Hodu. Kush stresses the fact that what? That he reigned over a tremendous territory. Okay. The Chad Omar, but the other one said, Hodu and Kush, Gabi Hadori Havakaime, says, you know what? Hodu and Kush, they were located next to each other. Now, of course, obviously, we know that that's not so. But what is the point that he's making when he tries to say this? What he's trying to say is, you know what? You think of him as a big shot because he ruled over all such a tremendous territory.
You were next to each other.
He was no big shot. Wasn't a big shot.
Wasn't such a big
right, it wasn't a big deal. Order and Kush, and one is right next door to the other. Father, that's all.
Like feeling like a small kingdom.
Maybe there wasn't too much opposition. Yeah. The other people wanted to rule that area, you know.
Whatever, okay. then, okay. All right. So, right. So now the question is: Kishem Shemalach al Hodu Likush Kach Malach Mesavil Vatsayfe. In other words, just as he ruled over Hodu and Kush, so he ruled from one end of the world to the other. Which again, what we could take either praiseworthy that Taka he did have a big realm over which to rule, or we can take it in the other sense that you think that that was a big deal. It was no big deal.
Well, that was the known world at that time. Is that right?
Well, as far as Asia Minor is concerned, right, and you know, the Middle Eastern area, yes, yeah.
Now, I have a question because this is like the parameters of Alexander the Great's empire did.
Yeah.
They did not, the Persians, they did not rule over Macedonia and Greece, right? They did not rule over.
No,
okay,
no.
Right.
They never did. There was a big war between the Greeks and the Persians, and ultimately the Greeks beat the Persians.
Okay,
right.
So they never
right.
were able to rule. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it says, Kayotze Badover. Similarly, Ato Omer, we find another pasuk, and this time it's in reference to Shlomo HaMelech. It's written over there, Ki hu rodeh b'chol eiver ha-nohor b'tifsach v'yad azo. That Shlomo HaMelech ruled the entire eiver ha-nohor, which would mean what we would call the other side of the Jordan River, from Tifsach to Azza. Now again, the question is, now Azza we know is not on
Gaza.
The other side of the Jordan.
Is Azza Gaza?
Azza is Gaza, of course. But Tifsach is someplace over in the other side of the Jordan. So, Rabbi Shmuel, again, the same argument between Rabbi Shmuel and Chad Omar. One that said that Tifsach Pesef Oilom, Miyazah Pesef Oilom, that, you know, Tifsach was at one end of the world, literally, but it means, you know, one end of the realm, right, and now it's at the end of the other one. The Chad Omar, another one said, Tifsach Miyazah, he says, Ba'adodeh Habikaime. They're right next door to each other. Okay. All right, and Kishem Shemolach al Tifsach v'al Azor. So just as he ruled over Tifsach and Azor, Kach Molach al Kolom Kolei. This is if you take it for what? For Sheva, right? If you say in praise, then you have to say, you know, that Taket was a tremendous realm over which King Solomon reigned, okay?
But what's this, 127?
No, that's already the next part of the Pasuk, okay? As I said, there's no punctuation over here. There's no punctuation. So that's why we have to supply periods, quotation marks, etc., etc. Okay? All right. And of course, the other would say, no, what's a tifsach nanasa? You know what I mean? So you take it which way you want. All right. We'll go into that a little bit later because we'll see again that just as we talk about great rulers, we see that sometimes that they're not as great as they may think, or that we may think that they are. Okay, all right. So, Vayehi be'Achashverosh, who Achashverosh, Hamolech be'Horiat Kush. Right. Mm-hmm. What's the next one? Shehev of Yisum u'Meyo Medino. Right. 7 and 20 and 100 medinos. Okay. In English, we say 127, but you notice they break it up into 7 and 20 and 100. Right. Sheva v'yesu meyo medino, right? So Omer Rav Chisto. So Rav Chisto explains, why doesn't it say 127? Why does it say 7 and 20 and 100? He says, I'll tell you why. He says, because b'tchila, first of all, molach al sheva. He started off his reign, right, by ruling over 7 kingdoms, right? 7 provinces. But if so, and then afterwards, what happened? Molach al esrim, right? Then he now was the king over 20 provinces. But if so, Molach al Me'ah. Finally, he ruled over another 100. So far, it sounds very good, right? So he ruled over 7 and 20 and 100 to show you that this was the progression. First 7, then he conquered another 20, and then another 100. Okay. So Elabata, so they asked the following question. Look, this is the way the Hebrew language expresses itself. It's written concerning the life of Amram. Remember, Amram was the father of Moshe Rabbeinu. How long did he live? 7 and 30 and 100 years. And there's no drush about that. No. There is, of course, a very famous drush about Sarah, if you remember.
Right.
You Chaye Sarah, right? That Sarah's life was
110.
Like right? 100 years. You know, they interpreted that at each stage of life she was as perfect and as beautiful as she was at the latest stage of life. Okay.
Right.
Innocent, right. Kivas Sheva. At 20, she was as innocent as Bar Sheva. At 100, she was as beautiful as she was when she was at the age of 100, and so on and so on. Okay. At the age of 20. Yeah. Okay. But with Abram, there's no particular drash. So they say, so what? So what are you telling me then? 127?
They're dividing it.
Okay. Okay. So he says, Shadi Hachi. So he says, you know what? In the case of Achashverosh, we have the Kroyasera. We have actually, it's an additional pasuk. I mean, what does the Torah have to tell us that it already said what? Ksivit already said that Yehuda v'yad Kush, right? So, Sheva v'yes meyo medino lomali. So what do I need that the Megillah then says 7 and 20 and 100 more, right, Medinas? What do I need it for? So Shmuel and Adrash. So obviously, it's not just a nice way to say it in Hebrew, but it gives me an opportunity to interpret it as I interpret it. In other words, what did Rav Chisda say? First 7, then an additional 20, and then an additional 100. So that's the reason. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Excuse me. Is it the way you have it? Is it first 7, and then he ruled over 20, and then he ruled over 100? Or
yeah.
First was it 7, then he had another 20, so
he
27, and so then another 100, so
and
he came to 127. That would make sense.
Right.
Make
right. So the total was 127. Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Tadu Rabbanan, another teaching concerning this. They say, Shloisha Molchu Bekipa. You know what? There were three kings who ruled over the entire world.
The same three kings.
No, not the same three kings. The Elohe. And we'll see. And now he lists them. Achav, the Achashverosh, and the Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? So, how do we know that in the case of Achav, this is Achav, it's written, Chai Hashem Alekechon Yesh Goyim Amloch Hashem Lo Yishalach Adini Shem Vakeshcha. If you remember, Achav, as already was mentioned before by David, he gave the wrong name, but then he remembered.
I know.
Okay. We're on the right track, however. Alright? He was married to Izebel, or in English we call it Jezebel. Okay? And she wanted to destroy the Avedis Hashem, the worship of the Rebbeinu Shalom in the land, and said substitute the Canaanite gods. You know, she came from Phoenicia, so she wanted to substitute, her gods instead, okay? The Baal, the Ashtoreth, etc., etc., okay? So, at any rate, she began to persecute the Nevi'im. The prophets who Levi Hashem, not Levi Habal. That's a different story.
Right.
I remember. Okay.
No,
all right. Now, of course, who was the outstanding Levi Hashem? Was Eliyahu at that time. Eliyahu Novi. Okay? So, Achav wants to find Eliyahu Novi, obviously, to call him back and to punish him, you know, for preaching, etc., etc. or maybe he wanted to have a conversation with him before, or something, or right. But anyway, he's looking for Eliyahu, and it's written over here in the Pasuk. The Pasuk was uttered by Ovadia. Now, Ovadia was loyal to the service of Chabad Shalom, and he was also at the same time like a minister to King Ahab. So Ahab sent him to go find Eliyahu for me, right? So Ovadia finds Eliyahu, right? He finds him. And he says to him, as God lives, he says, I don't know whether there's any nation or kingdom where my master did not send some, you know, people to find you. You understand? So, the Elo, to have a Malach Alayhu, Hechem Utsu Mishnah, okay? And so, the exposition continues by saying, look, if he didn't rule over all these Goyim Amlocha, right? Over all these nations and kingdoms, then how would Ovadia know that, he sent every single where in order to find you? He would not have had that knowledge unless Hitaka was the king of all the Syria. So this proves what? That Ahab was like a world ruler. Alright. May not like it, but that's the drasha. Okay. Now, who's the next customer over here? Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, well, right, Nebuchadnezzar we know is a very important king. He conquered many territories, right? Ditzer, we have a Pasuk. And the Pasuk is in Yirmiyahu this time. And it says, well, Yoha Goy Vam Amlocha shall yitain in Samaroi Beo Melch Bavil Achashvero, Beo Melch Bavil, it says. And it shall come to pass that any nation, any kingdom that will not submit literally, would put his neck into the yoke of, right, who will not submit to the king of Babylonia, so what is going to happen to the Benish is going to send famine unto them, and they'll be destroyed, okay? So, therefore we see that Nebuchadnezzar is destined to rule over all the kingdoms, right? And how about Achashverosh? He says, "Who knows? We already said, that 120 he reigned, from the Yehudu Yad Kush means that he reigned over the entire known world." Okay, I'd like to call your attention simply to the Tosfos that we have at the bottom over there. You see it? Yep. Very simple Tosfos. Shloshim Lochem Chodem Kolei. Right? They come to this and say, "The Horde the Lechoshev Alexander Bukhtim. How come they didn't mention Alexander of Macedonia?"
Yeah.
Right? So he says, Mishum de lo aire hocho ele biyosu maksim lehedya. He says, the reason being, because the only kings who are mentioned over here are those who are mentioned in the Bible. And since Alexander is not mentioned in the Bible, that's why they didn't bother to list them over here. But in other words, according to Tosfos, he was also an important ruler who ruled over many, many nations. Okay?
So they have Romans, but they didn't want they didn't want to mention it.
Right? They could have easily mentioned, of course, Augustus Caesar or somebody, but they didn't. Okay. All right. Next.
So we're on.
We are now turning the page to Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Okay. Oh. Let's. Anybody doesn't have that? We have it over here. Let's see. Faith begins with with the Simon over there. I must have picked up the wrong page over here or something. Okay, you got it?
Yeah.
Oh, fine. Okay. All right, good.
You got it down there?
Yeah.
No, so pass a couple of more pages over there.
Yeah?
Yeah. I just passed them.
Okay. Yeah.
You passed them? Okay, good.
All
right. So, we've mentioned three kings who ruled over the entire world, right? So the Gemara now asks the following question: Masul Leka, it means to tell me that there aren't more kings who could have been mentioned, right? Pardon me. Siman means that way to remember who we're going to be talking about in the next group is Shin, Samach, Resh, and Chaf. Now, as we'll see, Shin, Shin, Samach, Dalet. It looks like a Resh. It's a Dalet. It's a Dalet. It is a Dalet. How do I know? Because if you look further down the page, they explain who it's going to be. Okay. All right. The Shin, first of all, stands for Shloime. Okay? Shloime. That's the Shin. Right, Shloime. Right, so the same. Oh, here goes Shloime. What's the matter with Shloime? Leis Sodek Malchuse. So they answer that. Well, yeah, but it didn't. His kingdom did not turn out so successfully.
Right.
All right. Solomon.
Solomon.
No, but it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Disappeared.
Right.
I'm missing stuff.
Okay. So it says, "Nicholamanda Omar," in accordance with the sage who says, "Melech vehedyot." Okay. That, you know, first he was a king and then he became simply a common man. Oh, it's based upon something that we learned in the Gemara Sota, where they had the story about him.
I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to go back again.
Okay.
Of course, you know, he married women and they set up Zora and so on and so forth, right? But it's based upon the fact that according to tradition he was expelled from his kingdom and he had to go around as a poor man, if you remember, and so on and so forth. And this is why it says Ani Koheles Hoyisi Melech Al Yisrael B'Yerushalayim, that I was once upon a time a king over Jerusalem.
So there are two
difference of opinion. One says that he was Melech Vehedyot, in other words, he started off life as a king, but he finished as a commoner. Okay. Elo Laman Oma, but there's another opinion which says Melech Vehedyot to Melech, right? That he was king, then a common, and then he became king once more. So Mayikol Neymar, right? So what can you say? Because in that case, you'd have to say that after all, he was a big ruler. So it says Shloime Milsach Vito Havabe. It says actually the pasuk, the story that we have about Shloime actually is to stress a different element concerning him. Different aspect of it. And what is it? Shemolach alhu yoinim yatachtoinim, that he was able to reign over heavenly creatures and over creatures down below. Shenemar, as it is written, Vayeshev Shloime al kisei Hashem, that Shlomo sat on the throne of God. Okay? Now, obviously, if he sat on the throne of God, that means that he had a special power to even rule over creatures who were not of this world. So the question is, who did he rule over? The answer is demons, spirits, or something like that. You know, but there's a famous story about Shamir, the worm that he used in order to break the stones, the Beis HaMikdash, and so on. We have to go back again once in a while and review some of the things that we've had in the past. Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. And of course, poor Shlomo, you know, was the other guy assumed the appearance of Shlomo HaMelech, while poor Shlomo was going around, you know, trying to convince people that, you know, I am Shlomo, and so on, and he had a rough time of it. So, okay. But at any rate, by having this dominion, for example, over the Shamir, over the special worm, which was able to do the cutting of the stone for the base of Mikdash, right, and this is miraculous in nature. Okay. All right. So, now they name another candidate. Oh, Havet Sancheirin. All right, how about Sancheirib, Sennacherib, we call him in English, okay? Remember, he conquered northern Israel, and then he threatened all of Yehuda, but as after he laid siege to Yerushalayim, Sancheirib. Yeah. When he laid siege to Yerushalayim, a miracle occurred, and his army retreated. Why did they? Well, the answer is that actually there was a conspiracy back home against him, and so he wanted to settle that, and in the end he was killed by the conspirators, okay? So, at any rate...
So there was no plague? They just weren't... They, I suppose that his army had a plague?
Yeah. Well, it all depends what you... Correct,
no,
okay?
No, I understand.
But, I
heard this about the conspiracy.
Right. But also, the business with the plague, if you remember, there's an earlier story about how the Syrians, you know, the Aram, the days of Elisha, All right. So, at any rate, how do we know that Sancheirib considered himself a ruler of the world? This is, we have a pasuk. The pasuk is in Yeshayahu that he comes and he threatens the people of Israel, the people of Yerushalayim, And what does he say to them? He says, "Mi bechol elohim atzosa ila shehitzilu esaram miyadi." Show me one nation among all the various nations that I have conquered who was able to save his land from my hands.
Right.
So, in other words, he must have conquered everything. So they say, one place, he didn't. Or Iko Yerushalayim, the Loikmosha. But there's Yerushalayim which he did not conquer. Alright, Sancheir, that's the Samach that you asked me about before. Okay? Now comes Mr. Dalit. Who's Mr. Dalit? Daryavish. Or in English we call him Darius. Alright?
Darius
or Darius. Maybe Darius they call him now. Okay. I used to call him Darius, but I guess they call him Darius.
Maybe no one, they don't know the real thing.
Right. How would you say it in Hebrew? Daryosh or?
Daryavish.
Interesting.
But I'll tell you, my late professor of Bible said that his Persian name was Daryosh. Daryosh. So you can see from the spelling over here, but became Daryavish in Arabic. But in the Greeks, where they also speak about him, you know, so first of all, Cyrus. Mm-hmm. All right, we have it Koresh, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay. The C that you see over there in Cyrus really was a curse sound.
Right.
And but when the Romans transcribed the Greek names, so then they changed the kappa into a C, because they also pronounce it K. Okay? We say
Darius?
Caesar, but the reality that the Romans probably pronounce it Kaiser. Okay?
Right.
Like the Galatianas, the Kaiser.
who is Darius? That
He is king of Persia. He was king of Persia. Right. Okay. So, Daryavish Malka, right? Okay. So, how about Daryavish or Darius or whatever you want to call him, Darius?
Yeah, okay.
Dirsiv, we have a pasuk. The pasuk says, Daryavish Malka, Kosav Lacholam Amaya, Umay Vadishnaya, Didairin Bacholara, Shalom Chen Yitzka. Okay. We find in the book of Daniel that the king, King Darius, whatever you call him, Daryavish, I'm going to say. Okay. That he wrote a letter to all the peoples in his kingdom. He wrote L'chol Amamaya, right, to all his peoples. Umaya, all his nations, right? Vilishnaya, and also in every language, right? The Dairin L'chol Ara, right? Who lived throughout his lands, okay? And what did he start at the beginning of his letter? He didn't start with Baruch Hashem. Instead, he wrote, Shalom Chen Yisqa, may your peace be great.
Oh, that's nice.
Huh? Yeah.
What?
Shalom Chem Yizkot. May your peace be great. Right.
God is dead.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, we find similar expressions in the Gemara also, that Shalom Chem Yizkot. In other words, you know, he sent the message, may your peace be great, and so on and so forth. Okay? So, it says over here what? So it says over here, specifically, that he wrote to all his nation, all the people, right? So obviously, if he ruled over every nation and language and group, etc., etc., so we see that he was also a world ruler, right? Wait a minute, they say. Yiko Sheva, the Loi Malach Aleihu. But as a matter of fact, there are seven kingdoms or provinces, whatever you want to say, that Dariavish did not rule over. Dichsiv, as we find, also in the book of Daniel, it's written, Shafar Kadam Dariavish, right? May it be pleasing before Dariavish. The Hakim al Malchuso Dachkash Tanya Mayavi Esvin. And let him rule over his kingdom, or let him actually appoint Hakim, you know, let him raise up over his kingdom, let him appoint over his kingdom 120 governors. Achashdar Panaya, right? Of course, we have to say Achashdar Panaya and Megillah says the two. So obviously, it's a Persian word which means a ruler of a province, okay? So what does it show? What does it say about Ahasuerus? How many places did Ahasuerus rule over? 127. And here Daniel says that he sent a letter to 100, to appoint 120 governors. So in other words, what's missing?
Seven.
Seven are missing, all right? So he wasn't such a knocker. Okay.
Well, wait. Hold on. He could have just combined some administrative work.
Go argue with him. They have already made the statement. Okay. All right. So that's anyway, Mr. Dalit. Okay. And finally, who's Mr. Kaf? Kaf, right? Vayikar Koresh, right? How about Koresh? Dichsiv, as it is written, Koyomar Koresh Melch Paras, right? This is, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, Kol Mamlechos Ha'oris Nosan Li Hashem. All the kingdoms of the world, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has given unto me. And of course, what happens afterwards? This was the beginning of the decree in which he gave permission to whom? To the Jewish people to do what? Right, to go back there to Israel and to rebuild the temple. All right, so he says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam has given me all the nations of the world, right? So, Gemara says, Hashem over there says, Ashtimbuchehu de komish tabach nafshe. Actually, what he wanted to do is to give his ego a boost. He was praising himself, he wanted to feel good, so he said, I'm the ruler of all the world. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I think we'll stop at this particular point. Tonight is already the 28th of November, I guess, in the year 2001. And tonight is already Yud Dalet in the month of Kislev. You can see already that Hanukkah is beginning to get a little bit closer. And we are now continuing in the Gemara Megillah on page Yud Aleph Omid Beis. Yud Aleph Omid Beis, which in English would amount to 11b. We are approximately in the middle of the page. And I just want to mention again for those of you who are missing last week, we are now going through the wording in the Megillah, and very often we go through it word by word to see what are the traditions, what are the teachings that we can imagine. As for example, we started with the first two words in the beginning, Vayehi Bimei, right? And what do we say about Vayehi Bimei? It shows that always it's a place of, it means it's going to be a time of tzoras for the people of Israel, okay? So, okay. And then, Vayehi Bimei Achashverosh, right? And so they try to, they say, what does the name Ahasuerus imply? So either it means that he was a very important man, he was the brother of the king, literally. In other words, he was related to Nebuchadnezzar, which would be one way, but the others say, you know, that it's Och, as we say, Och and Vey, okay, whoa, because what happened? The rest of it, you know, Varosh, in other words, he made all the people in this province poor. How do we know he made them poor? So we say, because he levied an income tax upon all of them, okay? So as a result, they all became poor. This we know from the last chapter in Megillah, where it's written, Vayosef Melech Achashverosh Mas Al Horas V'Yeyam, right? He levied a tax upon all the lands, and also even the islands of the sea, all the coastal areas, and so on and so forth. So, okay. And then it says, you know, HaMolech Behod V'Yad Kush. So what do we do with HaMolech Behod V'Yad Kush? So we said, there are two different, there's a difference of opinion. Those who say that Behod V'Yad Kush means that from one end of the world to the other, so he is a big man, right? But others say, what do you mean, Mahurat Kush? He said, Hodu and Kush are next door to each other. We're not talking now about reality, but we're talking about attitude, right? Namely, that, you know, that's not what it used to be, right? Okay. and then, you know, it mentions Sheva, the Yesma, Meod, and Medina. So the question is, why does it say 7 and 20? And 100 provinces. So one explanation that is mentioned, I mean the different explanations, but one that particularly stands out is the fact that first he reigned over 7, then as he got a bigger man, he reigned over 20, another 20 that, you know, he added to the 7, and then finally he added 100 more provinces to it in order to make up the total of 127. All right, so now we start with the second verse in the Megillah, which reads as follows: Bayomim Ahim, in those days, right? Kishevas HaMelech Achashverosh Al Kisei Malchuso, right? When the king sat upon his throne, right? And then what follows after that? But it's written, Mishnah Sholosh Nebalchon, in the third year of his reign, Osa Mishnah, the Cholavonim Asor, right? And he made a party, you know, for all his servants, etc., etc. And so we're now going to analyze the text over here in the light, as I say, of various traditions that we have. Okay. So, we start. Okay, Kishevas HaMelech. So, first of all, we're going to discover that there's a slight discrepancy. Well, I wouldn't say a discrepancy exactly, but the implication might be that in those days when the king reigned, what does it mean? Does it mean that he was already a ruler, or does it mean that he first began to reign at that time? You understand? So that's problem number one, because of Sir Basrei, the pasuk then that follows is written, and it says, Bishnah Shalosh Lemolcho, in the third year of his reign. This is when he made the party. So the question is, why does it say, Omar Rava, so Rava said, my Kishevis, what does it mean, when he was sitting or when he sat upon his throne or something like that? So, you know, the word Shevis, right, as we know, it means this is the infinitive form from Yoshev, so the right to sit, but we have different expressions based upon this root. And this is now how he interprets that. He says, the Ahash Nisyashwa Dato. Okay? This was after his mind, Dato Nisyashwa, became settled. You know, the word means to settle someplace. The Hit Yashev, right? Mit Yashvim, you know, people who settle someplace. Okay, so after his mind became settled. So the question is, what do you mean his mind became settled? So Rava continues. He says, "Oma bel shatze chosha v'toav ada chashiv no veloy ta'ina." He says, "You know what? Bel shatzar, he made a calculation, but nevertheless, he was wrong in his calculation. But I calculated, and I am not going to be mistaken in my calculation." Okay. So now, first of all, we have to talk about who is Belshazzar, and then what is Ahasuerus trying to say over here. We're talking about Ahasuerus right now. Yeah, we're talking about Ahasuerus right now. All right, so but first we have to know who was Belshazzar. He was the last king of Babylon, the last king of Babel. And of course, in the story of Daniel, we have a very famous episode about how, what did he do? He decided to have a great feast. At this feast, he took out the various kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, which, you know, had been conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, and brought to Babylonia, and he decided to serve wine to all his guests, you know, in the vessels taken from it, in order to show, you know, what a mighty king he was. And then, lo and behold, what happened? A hand appeared on the wall, right? And there's a handwriting on the wall. And what was the handwriting on the wall? It said, B'nai, B'nai, Tekel, Lefarsin. And of course, Belshazzar didn't know what was going on over there, so naturally he finally had to find a Jew who would be able to interpret for him, right? And of course, it was Daniel, we know that. Right? So he explained to him, B'nai, B'nai, he says, you know what? You have been counted, and the B'nai Shalem has been counting for you. Tekel, and you've been weighed in the balance. So Farsan, you know what? Farsan means that you're going to be broken up. That's one possibility. Or Farsan also means that the Persians are coming. Okay? Yeah. Persians are coming to conquer your kingdom. Okay. Yeah. So, needless to say, Belshazzar was kind of disturbed by this. But what happened the very next day? The next day, of course, Babylonia was conquered, and of course Belshazzar was killed, and so on. So that was the end of the Babylonian kingdom. Okay? Excuse me. So what is Ahasuerus saying over here? Ahasuerus is saying as follows. He says, you know, Belshazzar was counting upon the fact that the 70 years, we'll see in a moment, the Psukim over here, that the 70 years which had been predicted by Yirmiyahu HaNovi as the years of Babylonian captivity had come to an end, the Jews were still in Gaulus, and so therefore he figured, okay, that being the case, the Beit Shalem had rejected the Jewish people, and he would not bring them redemption, and therefore, in order to show, you know, the fact that he's able to spite the Jews, so he took out all these goblets, you know, and all the other things that were in the Beis HaMikdash, and used them, he displayed them in order to boast and to glorify himself. Okay? So Ahasuerus says this is what Belshazzar did, but he was wrong, because with his calculation, it brought upon him what? It brought upon him Abitur Sof. Okay? He died. His kingdom was conquered. But he says, I have a much better calculation, and with me, I see that the Jews still have not been redeemed, right? And so therefore, I too am going to do what? I'm going to do exactly what Belshazzar did. In other words, I'm also going to take the goblets from the Beis HaMikdash, and I'm going to use them in order to show that the Jewish people are finished as a people. Okay? This is what the story is over here. So, Keshevis means his mind was now at ease, right? It was now settled. And Omar, he said, repeating again the last couple of words, he said, Belshazzar, Choshevator, right? He calculated, but he was wrong, but Anu Achashivnu V'loitayna. I will calculate, and I will not be wrong. Now, my Gemara asks, in other words, all right, well, what was he talking about? So, they quote, Dixit, Pasuk number one that they quote is what? It says, L'fi melos lebovel shivim shona efkod etzchem. The prophet Yirmiyahu tells the people after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, right? And he says to them, when 70 years will be completed for Babylonia, God says, I will remember you. Efkod over here in the sense, like for example, on Hashem Pokad HaSora, right? Or we'll be reading in the Seder, you know, that we read last week, you know, that Rachel, after being barren all those years, Hashem, you know, also, he visited her and so on. In other words, he remembered her. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam says, after 70 years, and I'm talking through the prophet Yirmiyahu, when 70 years are completed for Babylonia, I will remember you. In other words, I will restore you to Eretz Yisrael. Uksiv, now we have another pasuk. This pasuk is in the 9th chapter of Daniel, where it says, "V'malos lechovos Yerushalayim shivim shana." When the completion of the destruction of Jerusalem will be 70 years, okay? So in other words, what has happened, and as we said, that's when the Geula will come. So, Chashov says, all right, let's figure it out. There are Boyim, the Chomesh, and Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, you have to count 45 years, okay? The Yesrim to Laws, the Evil Merodach. Now, who was the successor to Nebuchadnezzar? It was Evil Merodach, okay? So, he reigned for how many years? 23 years, okay? Tate the day, and then Belshazzar reigned for 2 years, all right? So, this is what Belshazzar was thinking. Okay, if I add up 45 in Nebuchadnezzar, right? And 23 for Evel Merodach, and two more since I've been reigning, so Hoshivim, right? So, it's now 70 years. Jews haven't been redeemed. So I'll pick money the way Mikdoshavish Tamish Behu. So therefore I'm going to take out the Kalim, you know, the vessels of the holy temple, and I will make use of them. All right, John's fine.
You were afraid to
but,
do it before
yeah, he was afraid to do it before him because he was afraid that if he did it too soon, then in that particular case the Rebbeinu Shel Olam would punish him. So that's the reason why. But now he figured, okay, huge. The fact that the Jews are still under my dominion, so it shows that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam still has
it.
Yeah, all right. No, according to the Gemara, he believed in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, okay? Naturally, he had his own deities, you know. I don't have to tell you, right? Nebu is one, okay? I mean, the Nebuchadrezzar is really his name, which means, you know, that Nebu will be the protector or something like that, okay? So, and then, of course, you know, we know that they also worship Baal. Okay, all kinds of traditions about that, that they were worships of Baal. Not Baal, but Baal, but, you know, probably the names are similar, okay? But that was the god of the Babylonians also, and so on. Look, they had different gods and goddesses and so on and so forth, okay? All right. So, this is Ahasuerus talking about whom? About Belshazzar. Okay? But the question is, how do we know the numbering of these years? Nebuchadnezzar menalon. How do we know, concerning Nebuchadnezzar, that Aboyin the Chameshon in Volach? How do we know that he reigned how many years? 45. All right. The Omar Mar, so this is based on the fact that one of the Chachomim said, Golu b'sheva, Golu b'shmeine, Golu b'shmin esrei, and Golu b'tisha esrei. The Jewish people had various exiles. They were exiled in year 7, exiled in year 8, excuse me, exiled in year 18, and exiled in year 19. Okay? Excuse me, yeah, I guess I'll take a moment out. Yeah, yes, sir, what was your question?
Nebuchadnezzar is first, then comes...
then comes Evel Merodach.
Merodach, then comes Belshazzar.
Then Belshazzar, correct.
Then Darius, and then Cyrus.
Well, after that, then the conquest, okay, after that.
So
okay. But these were the three kings of Babylonia, beginning with Nebuchadnezzar, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So... So as I say, the last the thing that we read over here is a little puzzling. It says what? That they were exiled in the 7th year, exiled in the 8th year, exiled in the 18th year, and exiled in the 19th year. However, we only know of 2 exiles. And here they're mentioning 4 of them.
4.
Right? Okay. So, That being the case, how do we explain it? All right. So in order to understand this, they go back again into the history, the last years of the kingdom of Yehuda, kingdom of Judah. Okay? It says, Golu b'sheva l'kibush Yehoyakim. Okay? All right. You see that over there? Golu b'sheva says they were exiled in the seventh year, right, of the reign, of the conquest of Yehoyakim. Okay. Now, we have to understand, and this was Golas Yehoyakim, Shehi Shmona the Nebuchadnezzar. Okay. Which is the eighth year, right? Okay, let's figure it out right now. Okay. First of all, right, we have to realize we had a wonderful king of Judah by the name of Yoshiyahu, or Josiah, we call him in English. Okay, what happened to him? He tried to prevent the Egyptian army from going through the land in order to fight against the Babylonians, okay?
The northern kingdom you're talking
about? No. Talking about Yehuda. It's already right. Afterwards,
oh,
okay?
Yeah.
Right. He was killed in battle, okay? He was succeeded by Yehoyakim, okay? Mm-hmm. Yehoyakim reigned for quite some time, and he was a no good king. He tried to introduce all kinds of Avodah Zorah and so on. And Yirmiyahu HaNovi, who was the prophet in his reign, you know, spoke to him and so on, and his reaction was to take a scroll containing the prophecies of Yirmiyahu and burning it in the fire that was blazing in the hearth over there, okay? In spite of the fact that he was loyal to Babylonia, but Babylonia decided to continue with a series of conquests of Eretz Israel, okay? He was succeeded for a very short time by Yehoyakim, who also sometimes called Konya, or Yehoyakim, or Yehonya. They even find different names that they go. But anyway, it's the same one. Yerushalayim submitted to Babylonia, and the result was that he took Yehoyakim, this is Nebuchadnezzar, he took Yehoyakim as a captive and brought him to Babylonia and put him in prison over there, put him in chains, put him in prison, and instead he appointed Tzidkiyahu, who promised to be a loyal subject of Nebuchadnezzar, he appointed him as king of Malchus Yehuda. Okay?
Yehoyakim, this is the time where 10 or 20 or 40,000 of the
correct.
Upper.
Correct. I was going to mention that exactly. That together with Yehoyakim, when he brought him to Babylonia, he also exiled some 40 to 50,000 Jews as well, particularly from the better educated classes, the higher classes, and so on. So we find or people who are highly skilled, for example, they call Hecharash Vahamatsker, in other words, people who were expert in being blacksmiths and carpenters and things like that, and so on. Okay? Right, right. Exactly. So we reckon, from the point of view of our Goyish calendar today, excuse me, the calendar that everybody uses, okay, that this took place about the year 597, prior to the Common Era, okay? Tzidkiyahu, yes?
Who appointed all these kings? Where they come from?
They were all descendants of the royal family. They were descendants of King David.
They were the sons of King David, right.
Could be a son, it could be a nephew, an uncle, and so on, right. You had the uncles, nephews also, you see, who, you know, if that was the closest person, or the most competent or whatever it may be. So that was it.
Murder and all kinds of other things going on there.
Occasionally. That was more common, by the way, in the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, that people were murdered over there. And in the kingdom of Yehuda, it was a little bit more stable as far as the line of succession was concerned, because of the fact that they had the tradition of being descendants of King David, you see. And this was Kisei David, you see, the throne of King David. The north, on the other hand, you had first a series of kings led by Yeravam ben Nevat, who led the rebellion against Rehoboam, who was the son of King Solomon, you remember? And then the general came along and he killed whoever was on the throne, and he became king, and then another general came along. You know, that sounds like the current events today. No.
Murder Incorporated.
So,
right.
My source.
Right. So then maybe, like, for example, Omri, who succeeded the throne over there after managing to dispose of his predecessor over there. So he had Achav as his son, so he reigned. Achav's son also reigned for a short while, but then bingo, that was the end of the dynasty over there too. And so Yehu you had coming in, you know. So as I say, in the north there was more of a mishmash over there, whereas in the south it was a little more stable. But the Babylonians decided, you know, that they would make Yehuda